Welcome to Afros in the Diaspora. My name is Sarah. I am your host, and together we will vent, rant, laugh, and cry as we discuss the highs and lows of being an immigrant. Stay tuned for stories that will inspire, inform, entertain, and give hope. This is Afros in the Diaspora. What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Afros in the Diaspora. I'm your host, Sarah, and today we have Niyasha all the way from Zimbabwe, living and thriving here in Canada. Niyasha, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, we're happy to have you too. Niyasha is an incredible dancer. I can't even really define all the things you do, because you see her in some movies. As a historian, she has like the knowledge when it comes to dance and movement.
Wow.
She also is doing incredibly well at work. And yeah, so shout out to you. Thank you for coming on here today.
Of course. Spend time with us. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Awesome. All right. As you know, right, we're about to hop right into the trivia.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
You know what? I don't know if I can wait to be ready. All I can say is let's go.
Okay.
You know, life just gets you. It doesn't wait. So, I mean, yeah.
All right.
Ready or not,
all right.
Let's go.
Here I come. All right. Ready or not, here I come. Yeah. All right. So, Niyasha, you're from Zimbabwe, right? So, we're going to ask you questions about Zimbabwe. I'll start with an easy one, okay?
Okay.
What currency is used in Zimbabwe?
Well, currently, I think it's called the Zig. That's the new one right now. I think they kind of like toggle between, like, mostly it's been the United States dollar, but now they call it the Zig. I don't remember what the abbreviation stands for, but it's a Zig. Last time I checked when I was there.
I don't know what the Zig is, but I know about the Zimbabwean dollars. Is that what the Zig is? Is that the Zig?
What do you call that? I think it's like gold index or something to do with gold. It's just I think they recently implemented it in very recent, because we're in May, right? So like, April 2024, I think that's when it kind of took off. Yeah.
Well, I learned something just now, so that is fantastic. Yes, yeah. That's what we love. Okay, awesome. All right. Describe the national flag of Zimbabwe for us.
Okay, so... Mm-hmm. On the left side, there's a white triangle with a statue or drawing of the Zimbabwe bird, which is a bachelor eagle. And then there are, I know my stuff, period.
Okay, yes.
And there's stripes of different colors, a lot of them Pan-African, which are red, green, white, black. Yes.
All these colors are there.
Yeah.
But there's one more color left.
What did I say? I said red, green.
You said red, green, white, black, but there's one more color you're missing.
Why am I blanking? My God.
It's yellow.
Yellow, of course.
Yellow or
representing
gold.
Representing the minerals. Yes, of
yes.
course.
Yes. But fantastically done. What year was that design implemented to be the flag of Zimbabwe?
Oh man, I do not know, but I would say probably around like independence, around 1980, 1978.
Yes.
Oh, was it?
It's 1980. Yep. Yes. Okay. Look at you. Yeah. Back to back. I love it.
I do know something contrary to popular belief.
I mean, come on now. We know you are a brilliant human being. Please stop it.
Thank you.
Okay. Another question.
Mm-hmm.
What is the name of this staple food of Zimbabwe, as well as other countries in the region, that is made from white maize?
Okay.
It resembles a porridge.
Okay. In my language, in Shona, they call it sadza. In the Ndebele, they call it ischwala. I know.
Languages. Yes.
Listen. We know things. Yeah. So, sadza, ischwala, like a different language.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh, I love this. This is so awesome. Yes, it is Sansa.
Yeah.
Ah, wonderful. I want to throw you off though, so I'm gonna try to find a harder one. Okay. But Zimbabwe, what did Zimbabwe used to be called before it was renamed Zimbabwe?
I believe it was called Rhodesia or Southern Rhodesia, because I think Zambia was Northern Rhodesia, but Rhodesia.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yes. Correct. Ding ding ding. Ooh. Okay, okay. I love this. All right. Another question for you. Yeah. What is the name of the current president of Zimbabwe?
His name is Emmerson Mnangagwa.
Please, can somebody spray Niasha money? Can someone spray her money?
PayPal me, e-transfer yes, me.
Anything. Just please send her money. Because so far, you have like aced all the questions. As in... Okay. Speaking of presidents, what's the name of the previous president of Zimbabwe?
His name is Robert Gabriel Mugabe. He was the first prime minister and was the first president of Zimbabwe until, I think, his ousting in a couple years ago. I don't remember the year, but I believe that was the previous president. And the prior only president. His name is Robert Mugabe.
Robert Mugabe, yes, that is correct. And he got out in 2017, I believe.
Yeah, around like 2018, around that time, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mugabe resigned after a coup in 2017. And yes, there was an election and the new president got in. Mm-hmm. Yes, correct. Amazing. Okay. I'm gonna read out a few quotes.
Okay.
And I want you to tell me the one that is not from Robert Mugabe.
Okay.
Okay, I'll read out three because some of these are long, so please bear with me. Okay. All right. I have died many times. That's where I have beaten Christ. Christ died just once and resurrected once. That is the first saying.
Okay.
Number two, Zimbabwe is for Zimbabweans, so are its resources.
Mm-hmm.
And then number three, only God who appointed me will remove me.
You know what? I'm going to go with my gut and I'm going to go with two, because I know that he had a lot of like indigenization policies. Mm-hmm. So I think this whole Zimbabwe for Zimbabweans, for indigenous Zimbabweans thing, I think that sounds more like his speed. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with number two.
Okay, that was a trick question. He said all of them.
Oh, well, shoot.
Surprise. I had to throw you off somehow. Come on, man.
Well, you know what? You got me. You got me. And I would believe all three of them, actually. If I had to choose one, I'd go with the second one, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, all three check out, quite frankly. So, yeah.
The one about Christ knocked me out when I saw it. I was laughing so hard. It's like, he has a one-up on Christ.
He really did have a way with words. A certain kind of poetry, if you will. It was, yeah, it was, you know, yeah, it was what it was. So
he could have been a poet, for real.
I believe so. If he wasn't already, yeah.
If he wasn't already.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my days. Okay. How long did Mugabe reign as leader of Zimbabwe?
I believe since its independence until his ousting, until like the coup, I believe.
Yeah. So how many years?
You're going to make me count? Oh, God. What's 19?
Yeah.
20, is that 37 years?
37. Yeah. We know you deal with math on a day to day, all right? So yes.
Listen, it's past 5 o'clock, so I think my brain is.
You clocked out. You've clocked out for the math for today. Okay. How long does a presidential term last in Zimbabwe?
I believe it's the usual 4 years. I think
it is 5 years in Zimbabwe.
Wow! Yikes.
Yeah. I was actually very surprised about that because it's 4 in Nigeria and literally any other country I know.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Is it 5? Oh.
It is 5. Yeah, it is 5.
Hmm.
You know what? I'm gonna let's a round of applause for Niasha. Like, clap, clap, clappity, clap, clap. You did your thing. This was awesome. We're gonna move on to some riddles now. I have some corny riddles for you.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Hit you. Okay. These are very corny. So
I'm ready.
All right. What gets wet while drying? Don't even think about anything too serious. Like, think about the most, like, what gets wet while drying?
Water? I don't know. I'm blanking hard.
A towel.
I was gonna say that, but then in my head I was like, that whole like, is water wet thing got into my head, and then I was like,
No, see, I said the most like random.
It was either water or towel. So.
Yeah, towel.
Okay.
What question can you never say yes to? Can you never answer, actually?
Oh, okay. So if you had said, can I not say yes, is can I have $1 million? And I would say never, because I don't have it. But could I never say...
Like, not just you, just, like, people
like
in the world.
Like a rhetorical question?
No, it's not rhetorical, but it's just a way to see if a person is doing the thing. Like, are you blank? If the person says yes or no, then they're not doing the thing. So what is the blank? What is the thing?
Well, my answer was a rhetorical question, because rhetorical questions don't need answers, but...
Don't need answers, yeah.
Are you
sleep.
Blind? Are you
what?
Sleep?
Oh, did you say you blind?
No. I was going to say... I was gonna reference, like, at East Coast, like, are you dumb? Like, Toronto.
Oh.
Like,
yeah.
just another, like, you know, question.
Yeah.
It's all
good.
Are you asleep? All right. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you say, you know how kids are like, are you asleep? And then they say yes. They're like, you're not asleep.
And then you're like, blink twice if you're sleeping.
and they're like, yeah. All right. What kind of band never plays music?
Yeah. I have no clue.
Rubber band.
Wow. Did you make these up?
I found these online.
You know what? I appreciate you doing your research on these. They are really hard. So thank you. I never would have gotten that. I fear.
Me neither. Okay, let me ask you two last ones. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. When is a door no longer a door?
Oh God, when it's not on the hinges, I guess. I don't know.
That's kind of close, actually.
When it doesn't have a handle? I don't know.
When it's ajar.
You know what? You know what? I'm starting to think you made this category up because you wanted me to get some questions wrong, because you knew I'd get all the other actual questions right. You know what? Yeah. Okay. You got me.
I usually ask this as well.
I know. Well, you got me.
It's so silly.
You know what? Yeah. Ajar. Wow.
Ajar.
Is there a site that you go to? Or like, okay.
There's just random websites that have riddles.
That's
okay.
So the final question. Okay.
The final question. Before Mount Everest was discovered, what was the highest mountain in the world?
Wait, is this a riddle or an actual question?
I mean, it could be, like, there's an actual answer to it, too.
Oh, okay. Oh, I don't know.
Before it was discovered.
I don't know. What are the other ones? Kilimanjaro? Is it Mount Fuji? I don't know.
Okay, it was Mount Everest. It just wasn't discovered.
You know what? You know what? You know what? You know what?
That's okay. The end. That's
okay.
The last one.
Okay. All right. That is funny. I can't imagine like people who like whoever manages that site just like cracking up. Just listing these down and being like, I'm really doing this. I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I wonder like where people's minds go. Like on another episode, I think the last one I released with Idris, I asked him a question and I just started laughing at the answer and that gave it away because it was so silly. Like what? anyway.
That's hilarious. No, that's great. I love it.
Yeah.
Never, I mean, if anyone ever asks me this again, I think I will know the answer.
Now you know it. Now you know it. Just think of the most unserious answer. Yeah. And then you're closer than you think. But this has been awesome. Thank you for engaging with me with these icebreakers. Awesome. All right, Niyasha, we are talking today about your story of how you moved here. I think you have an absolutely beautiful story of how you were able to move to Canada. Would you mind just starting like from the beginning of that journey for you? Like you finished senior secondary school. And, you know, what was your mindset? What were you thinking at that time? What did you feel like your next steps were?
For sure. Yeah. So as Sarah said, I come from Zimbabwe. I grew up in a small mining town right in the middle of Zimbabwe called Kwekwe. But I went to a school to high school in another city. I went to another to high school in another city called Bulawayo, which was like in another province. But basically, I graduated. And like ever since, like I was like probably like 15, which is like right before I started writing like my what we call like ordinary levels or O levels, if for my people who are familiar with like the Cambridge GCSE system, the British system. I just kind of was like looking, like you start thinking about what you want to do after school, where you want to go, what you want to study, blah, blah, blah. Because after you write your O levels, you have to decide, you have to boil down your subjects to like four or five for like advanced levels. I was just thinking about what to study. Like when I was in school, I was like super good at like math and stuff like that. So I knew it was going to be something around that, but I also really wanted to like leave the country because like at around that time when I was like 15, 16, it was like 2008 Zimbabwe. And everyone who knows what I mean when I say 2008 Zimbabwe, that was just, I mean, all over the world economically, it was not a great time. So, I think for me, I was just like thinking about like, you know, going to study somewhere else and hopefully immigrate there. And for me, like naively, because I was like a teenager and like, you know, 15, I was like, I want to go to Canada. Like Canada is so unproblematic. Yikes. You have to come here to find out. But like, you know, in global news, in terms of just like whoever is always like harping on like the headlines, like Canada is nowhere to be found like usually. So I was like, you know what? No news is good news. Let me look for Canadian universities, et cetera, et cetera. But at that point in time, like it was 2008, like my mom had like, had gotten laid off. My mom was like a widowed, like single mother. Like my dad had passed away like when I was 11. So it was really kind of like very bleak, but at least all I had was like, at least I knew how to like study and like stuff like that. So academics were fortunately on my side. I was able to get a scholarship, which saw me through the rest of my education and helped out my mom a lot. And while I was like studying and doing school, like I was still doing my research on like universities and like scholarships for international students and stuff like that. So yeah, I finished school in 2011. And then like, I was just kind of like applying. I was like handling the whole like application process myself. I was doing my research by myself, contacting universities, like asking questions about like funding and the program that I wanted to study, which was actuarial science. And then I ended up getting into the University of Calgary and getting like two scholarships. Which was like, I was like super,
okay.
Super
grateful. Brains?
Super grateful. After I got my admission, that's when I had to start the upward battle. If anyone lives in any African country, you know how our bureaucratic governments are when it comes to any kind of like immigration document or any other government document. So you know how that goes. So then I had to like collect all this information that I had to prove that like I was able to live there. And like a lot of my family came through to like support me to like, you know, be able to get this. And like a lot of my family like housed me. I was like bouncing. I was in Harare and like the first like 8 months trying to like hustle like my documentation. And as well, I was like volunteering for another like company just to kind of like, you know, find something to do while I was there.
So just for a moment, how old were you at this point?
I was 18. Okay. I was 18. Yeah, so I was 18. Yeah, so like the 8 months between, like, because our academic year goes from like January to December, but there's like breaks in between. It's not like here where there's like a 4 month, break in the middle of the year. But so I graduated or I finished school like 2011 December, and like January 2012 onwards, like I moved to Harare and I was like staying with like family, just trying to like figure out what the heck I was doing and stuff like that. Yeah, so like I finally got my visa, I think like 2 weeks before like orientation, which was like, because like at that point in time, like I'd resolved myself to so be like, you know what, I gave it my best, I gave it my all, and I was like literally about to leave. My uncle calls me and he's like, you got the visa. And I was like literally, I was like, it was like one of those, like at the final hour, like everything like finally came through. And it was just like this whirlwind rush of trying to get everything ready. Like at that point in time, like I was not even prepared at all to like leave or whatever. So I had to go home and like we had to like start preparing like really quickly. And also I had like my plane ticket, which was also like family was helping me. And I remember like as we were kind of gathering everything, my mom and I, and my mom was like at this point still like not working, still not employed. And then like, I was like, I mean, I've got the visa, I've got the scholarship, I've got the admission, you gotta let me go. And she did. And I admire her faith in me for, letting this like 18, I think I just at that point in time was like I just turned 19, leave the country and start a life in another country. And I think like my whole family just kind of like pulled it, like, you know what I mean? Like pulled strings, did this, did that to kind of like, get me to where I needed to go. My uncle in South Africa, he was able to like host me while I was like getting all my stuff together right before I left. But my favorite memory of me leaving Zimbabwe for the first time, like it's my first time going on a plane, like my first time leaving like the continent. And it was by myself. Like, thankfully, I was so naive that like the excitement carried me through the fear. When I think about it now, I was like, oh my God, if I had a kid who was like 18, I would
Never.
never in this world. No, thanks. But I mean, I feel like at that point in time, I had a pretty good head on my shoulders. So I think my mom was like, okay, like I feel like you have proven to me that you can handle yourself. But yeah, I remember my favorite memory when we were walking from my house to like take a bus, because I took a bus from Zimbabwe to South Africa to like, I think it was like Johannesburg. And my mom was like carrying my suitcase on her head, and we were walking to like the bus stop, and I was like, this is what it's about, folks. This is what it's all about. And I appreciate my family so much for, quite honestly, like that whole thing of like, it takes a village. It really, really does. And I really would be nowhere without them, like to this day. Like if it wasn't for, people like really putting their weight behind me, like from like the organizations that funded me when I was in high school to all the scholarships that I got. And like after I left, like I was on my own. My mom was like, listen, you better get a job. Literally I landed like 2 weeks later, I was working. So I was like, grinding because I wanted it so badly. But thankfully my family was able to like, support me in little ways that they could, especially my mom, who thankfully, like right after I started like university, she also started working again. She was able to find a job. So that kind of helped. But it wasn't like, I mean, international student fees are not cute.
No.
It was still tough, like with the scholarship and her now working, like it was still a bit tricky. And also I had to like pay for my own self buy textbooks. So it was just a lot. But I mean, I made it. I made it. I made it. I'm really thankful for my family, because honestly, like I would never I never would have made it if it wasn't for them. So whenever I'm like succeeding or like, doing something great in life, I always feel like I carry them on my back, and like everywhere I am, they are. So I'm really thankful and grateful that for their love and support.
Like, I have, like, there's so many points in there. First of all, the brains. Hi. Hello.
I'm grateful, Ben. I'm
You
thankful.
got two
Thankful.
scholarships. Like, that is not easy. Like, that is by like that is well, yeah, you did that. Okay, first of all.
I tried. Thank
And
you.
then, you know, like, shout out to family. And that's that thing of support, right? That, like, you know, the uncle here, the, you know, neighbor here, the, and like that support that you cannot buy in the market. Like, it's just literally a gift and a blessing, you know, and that, you know, sense of community. And ooh, so much I want to ask about. I always ask this, and I'll ask it again and again and again. So, what were like a couple of cultural shocks that you met, and you're like, whoa. Oh, man.
I think, I don't know, obviously, like, the racism, that was, like, I had never been, like, racially othered before, especially coming mm-hmm. from a place where, like, you know, I was, like, you know, ethnic majority, racial majority. Mm-hmm. Also, mm-hmm. I was living in a place to which I was indigenous. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like I took so much of, like, the things that built up my identity for granted. Mm-hmm. So I think right. it's just, like, this experience of just, like, feeling as though I wasn't, like, normal, or, like, I wasn't in the middle of, like, the bell curve. It was a little bit jarring, because I was, like, initially I was, like, oh, it's just curiosity. And then, like, it took me, like, a couple years, but I was, like, oh, I think this person doesn't want to learn anything about me. They just want to, like, you know, yeah.
Can you give an example of what that was? Because I feel like sometimes when we say racism, people are like, what is that, though, you know?
I mean, Canadian racism has its own flavor.
It's a brand, a label.
It's got its own branding. But I think most of it was just kind of like little microaggressions, with just like assumptions about, because like I'm Zimbabwean, obviously I'm African. Like, I think a lot of people would just be like, oh, you're from Zimbabwe? Like, I went to Uganda once in 2013. And I'm like, I love that so much. I don't know how that's connected. But I think it's just all these kinds of, like, I felt like my skin and where I was from, like, talked for me before I even said anything. So a lot of people mm-hmm. would assume things about me, or weren't actually curious, but they were just trying to confirm something that, like, confirm a suspicion or confirm, like, right. a stereotype, right? So they weren't actually very open-minded and, like, being curious about, like, what my actual lived personal experience was. Mm-hmm. They had an idea in their head of what, like, Blackness or Africanness or Zimbabweanness meant. And they were just trying to ask me to lead me to confirm that, which was not, obviously, that's not my truth. So it was just really jarring. I'd imagine, like, even, like, I mean, like I said, like, when I moved here, I was, like, super young. So initially I was just like, oh my God, everyone's so nice. Everyone's so helpful. Oh, I love it here. And then, like, I think the more I lived here and the more I kind of, like, also, like, socialize with, like, other people. Another one that I would say was, like, a cultural shock is, like, the, like, cultural and, like, ethnic diversity here was, like, it was, I wouldn't say it was, like, a rough adjustment, but it was one of the more positive ones, because, like, like, it was just really great to kind of, like, have this experience with other people who might not necessarily have been Black, but, like, came from mm-hmm. cultures where, like, you know, they were Asian or, like, Hispanic or, like, from South America or, like, Caribbean or whatever. But, like, we had, like, so many similarities in our culture. And I was like, well, golly, like, look at us. We made it. Yeah. Immigrants. And I just love that. Oh, God. Yes. I love linking with other immigrants and just kind of, like, getting it without having to explain it. That's my favorite thing. That was one of my favorite things where I was, like, pleasantly surprised, because I was thinking that I would have that kind of camaraderie with, like, Africans, but, like, I was just so pleasantly surprised to share, like, an overall, you know what I mean? Like, shared experience with other immigrants from, like, other cultures where we had a lot of similarities, I think. Those two things. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. I think that was also a shock for me, seeing that, wait, there are Indians here and Chinese mm-hmm. people and, like, Middle Eastern, like, oh my gosh, I've never seen an Ethiopian before. Hi.
Literally. And I love Canada for that. That's one thing that I love Canada for. Because, like, you go to other places and, like, some people will literally be like, I have never met anyone from Vietnam before. And I was like, wow, that sucks. Sorry.
So sorry.
I don't know what that's like. You know what I mean? Like, or whatever. Like, I love that. Because, like, it's a very unique kind of country that way. There's not a lot of places where we have this kind of, like, cultural and ethnic mosaic. So I think that was a pleasant surprise. Yeah.
Yes, 100%. So how would you say, because from your story, community is extremely important to you, mm-hmm. right? It's important to us all. I mean, like, we all, it's an incredible, like, bedrock that gives us comfort. Like, you know, you've talked about the value of that, even though it was, like, your immediate community, extended family, and how would you say that you are giving back to your community for the support and like, I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like me personally, I don't know how to answer that question, because I'm like, I feel like I'm never doing enough. you know, I mean, like
I would have that's every single immigrant who kind of came here for like a better life and has the privilege to find work that actually pays you. So I would answer that by saying that I like in any way that like I can economically help. Like I think I just recently came back from a trip home in April. It was so beautiful to see my family, and also because I was celebrating my siblings' graduation, and they're all that ties into like that whole like how was I supporting my family. Like I think even when I was like here, like working, especially after I finished school, like I knew for sure because like my mom was like the only like supporting parent for my family, like for my siblings, for all of us. Like I think definitely like that was one of the biggest ways in which I kind of like was able to chip in the same way that like, you know, other people had like chipped in for me. I think it was just kind of like this unspoken. And I know my mom would like never ask until she was like, listen, we gotta work something out. I think it was just kind of like that, you know, I'll do the best that I can. And like everyone who sends money home or like helps at home never feels like it's enough, because the disparity between like the life, the quality of life here and the way life is here versus there, like, you know, like to someone like a coffee, like how much a coffee costs can be like, you know, it's nothing. Like I, you know, I spend $5 a day or whatever. Whereas like that's someone's like entire like daily earnings. So I think sometimes like the like gravity of like, you know, economic power is so like the weight of it is so overwhelming sometimes where you're like, oh my God, like, you know, is there something, can I do more? I always feel like I could do more. But I think in that sense, that's kind of like, with my immediate family, that's something that I felt like I was a part of, in assisting like in their, journey and stuff. Like, and for me, like, I don't know, I think to me, it's like a sunk cost. Like, I don't even think about it. Like, it's just one of those things. I feel like when you're raised in a way that's just like people help you because you're their family, like there's no like, okay, so your total is $12,698.62. Like, one thinks like that because like, kind of like, I think in a lot of like cultures across the world, like in the global South, there's this kind of like social economy of just like, listen, like we do things for each other because this life is hard. And like, you know, you really could be in, you're not, whatever you have right now, you're not going to have forever. And we understand that. Like, life is just wild. Like, you think like you have everything and you're economically and financially secure, but like a pandemic, like an economic collapse or whatever, could upset everything and like disturb the balance of like what you, like we kind of function in the sense of like not, I don't know. It's almost kind of like always being in crisis. So like crisis is not an event, but it's kind of like a lifestyle where you're always like on high alert, expecting the worst to happen. So you're always just like, whatever I got is not mine. So I'm like, I'm everything I have is borrowed, and like I have to be generous with everything because I know everyone will, you know, we have to come together because we're all we got, because everything is so transient, you know? So, I hope that answers the question. I feel like I rambled something.
I think you did answer it, because like that's the biggest way, right? It's like when you move here, if you can support your parents here and there, if you can like send things back home, support your sibling, whatever, that's the biggest way that people offer support. And that's the biggest way support is requested for. Right? Like that's the biggest way where it's like, hey, I need, you know, it's usually money. Like that's just call it what it is. It's usually money. Like they never ask, like it's not like, come on. I have memories of, you know, because growing up, I had like uncles and aunties abroad. And when they'd call, my dad would be like, hey, uncle, this person's on the phone. Come and say hi. And then I'm saying, uncle, good afternoon. How are you? I was abroad. I was America. I was, you know. And I'm like, and it's like, okay, Sarah, I'm visiting. What do you want me to bring for you? I'm like, I want a laptop. I want a phone. I want palm top. I want clothes. I want, I used to list, oh God. And then as I list the list, I'm expecting them in my very small, tiny mind of like a 7-8-year-old, expecting them to bring it right back to me. And then by the time they'll come back and they didn't bring it, I always have an attitude. I'm like, absolutely, like a little spoiled brat. And now I dare a cousin to ask me for a laptop. I will shoot you something from here. Like, I will fire you catapult from this Canada that I'm in. You will see double. You know what laptop is? You're asking for laptop.
That's all of us, before immigrating. Like, everyone's I have a relative. Like, so I want, Air Forces. I want Jordans. Yeah. I want an iPhone, the most recent one. Can I get some, And then I think it takes, going through that crucible of actually, traveling here, immigrating, adjusting. You're like, wow, money isn't growing on trees here. This is so crazy.
It is not, man. I remember, when my uncles are, visiting, or even because of the time difference and, you have to buy credit to make the call, blah, blah, blah. They have to arrange phone calls if they wanted to speak to the kids, right? So by the time they arrange that, at 7 o'clock, your uncle is going to call. See myself or my siblings, we'll go and write our little list. Ah, I want dress. I want.
Yeah.
I want. My list will have, 7 things on it, including phone, laptop, cloth, shoe, everything will be on that list like that. And as I'm talking, I'll be looking at Liz I want phone, I want palm top. I don't know if you remember those little palm tops that used to exist. I want a palm top, I want this. I'm telling you, I look back at those memories and I'm like, oh, Sarah, you're lucky said I not give you slap. You are lucky that you did not receive.
They were so patient and gracious to let us rattle off this list where they knew they weren't going to buy a single thing. They're like, palm top, laptop,
Yes. Okay. What else do you want? Oh, what else?
They'll just let you say it, and they're like,
"Is that all?" Yeah. They'll say, "Is that all?" Yeah. I'm like, "Yes, uncle, that's all." Okay,
I can go on. I have a second date. love that.
And now I'm like, I say the first thing, and I'm like, "Let me stop you there. It is going to be candy from the dollar store, okay?" And you will say thank you.
Oh my god! No, literally, you're like, listen, I mean, my family doesn't call me with requests, which I'm fortunate about.
Me neither.
People are very I don't know. My family is very much you know what you need to do.
It's an unspoken thing.
You know, they're like, what do you think I need in such a situation? And which is kind of a lot of questions, but I mean, they will be getting candy.
And that was it. Usually they just bring candy and just be like, maybe a t-shirt, you know, maybe or like something. A top or a dress or something, and that'll be it. And and there was this uncle who would bring a lot of clothes for us, and that was so freaking gracious of him. Until one day Amrobaz harassed him in Lagos. He flew back the next day. He's like, nope. You spoke about this a bit earlier, and I wanted to kind of circle to it. You talked a little bit about how when you first moved here, how your sense of, you kind of took for granted the things that grounded you and gave you a sense of identity and a sense of cultural grounding and stuff. Would you mind talking a little bit more? Again, I ask this question in every single episode, I'm asking it again. Mm-hmm. Would you mind talking about how, moving to Canada at such a young age too, and living here all these years, would you mind talking about how it has affected your sense of self and your cultural identity?
For sure. Yeah. I think it's just, especially in terms of just taking for granted all the things that were part of my identity that I kind of felt I didn't have to fight to hold on to, when I was growing up in Zimbabwe. I feel there was a gradual kind of how would I even phrase it? Trying to educate myself on stuff like Zimbabwean history. I feel I started to be more engaged on the history of actually Zimbabwe and the history of Shona people, the history of Ndebele people, and all the people groups that live there. And even just the history of Africa overall, because I think that was the first time in which I was different from other people. Not just in the racial way, but there was range and there was levels to blackness, right? There was all these different kind of ethnicities where it's kind of at home, everyone is just Shona or Ndebele, and it's kind of practices are similar, everything. We don't function and live life at that level of just having to put our ethnic and cultural identity first. It's just kind of the norm. But I think my identity like evolved in that, like I kind of started to become more like, or try to, you know, seek out an education about like myself and like where I'm from and like where other people are from and like what the similarities are and like what makes us, you know, what brings us together, what makes us similar, what makes us different. I would say definitely it strengthened my sense of self, because I feel like there's so many things, especially living like, you know, in on, you know, on stolen land, like under all these things that are just like, you start to kind of have a lot of like confronting conversations about like, you know, this used to be like, you know, the land of like milk and honey, but like, how can it be if like, this is literally someone's like we're having like a crisis of like women that are missing and are murdered. And like, no one is like, we really not talking about that. That's crazy to me. That's crazy to think that like someone might be like, wow, this is the place to be. And someone else is like, yikes, this is not the place to be, you know? So I think for me, there was a lot of like, especially like with my identity as an immigrant, right? Like just a lot of like confronting realizations about like what it meant to live in Canada and be, you know, Canadian. So there were just a lot of like, I mean, I'm not Canadian yet, but I feel like I've lived here enough to kind of like, sort of like nominally be Canadian, so to speak. But yeah, I think in one sense, it made me really kind of like more curious and invested in investigating what it meant to be who I was. And through, you know, making that a priority, I kind of felt like it made me stronger in who I was. So I could like, I don't know, you kind of do through the process of like, I don't know, I don't want to call it assimilation. I want to call it integration into society. Like you kind of have to develop whatever your exterior is. It's going to insulate you from all the stuff that's out there that doesn't want you here. Like, especially referencing like racism and like microaggressions and like the history of this place that, and the systems of this place that started with like, you know, oppressing Indigenous people. And like these systems we're all subject to, like, you know, land laws, you know, labor laws, like, you know what I'm saying? Like that stuff is not just affecting like Indigenous people or like Black people. Like we're all subject to the laws of this land. So it's just kind of like really kind of like, you know, tapping into like the things that made me, you know, who I was and kind of like forming that, like, I wouldn't call it a shell, but like a kind of exterior that would insulate me from all the incessant like questionings of like, why are you here? Why do you think you should be here? And just knowing why I'm here and like, you know, what my purpose is and also just like what my purpose is in like my community. And just like being an active member of like society and community makes me feel like, okay, like, you know, I feel like I'm a part of something and I'm a part of like something that I'm passionate about, or like I'm building something. I'm part of something bigger than myself. And I think to me, that's like a really important to me. So in that way, like throughout like my, I guess like young adult coming of age, as well as like being an immigrant, as well as just like realizing that I was like Black, which is like,
it's
which
a is, realization
you know what I'm saying? Cause like when you're home, you're just you, but like when you're here, you're Black and you're Black African and all other kinds of things. Yeah. So I think it did definitely, it was a journey. There was a lot of ups, a lot of downs, more downs than ups. But I think in that sense, I could really, with the community of like, you know, other people who are also immigrants and also going through this, like, you know, I wouldn't call it like an identity crisis. I would call it like a discovery of identity. Like we all kind of have these conversations like incessantly surrounding what it means to be this thing and that thing, or what it means to be in this space. So I think having those, that kind of community also just kind of like helped me kind of be like, oh, okay. Like I'm not the only one like thinking about this stuff. So overall, I do believe it has made me like, more, I don't know, like rooted in myself. So I feel stronger and I can stand on business in myself. So, I mean, I hope that answers your question, but I think that would be kind of my answer to it.
I think it does. I think it does. And I love your reframing of it's not an identity crisis, it's a discovery of identity. I think that's such a very powerful phrase. And that's what it is, really. Like, it's not really a crisis. It's you figuring things out. You've been faced with new challenges and discoveries. Now it's about realigning with yourself and finding out how all those things impact who you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And last question, how do you feel like you stay rooted in your Zimbabwean culture? Like, how would you say that now, today, in your 2024, you've been in Canada for such a long time already. Mm-hmm. How would you say that, you know, what steps would you say that you take to kind of like stay rooted in your roots as an African from Zimbabwe? And like, how would you say you do that? What's that practice like?
Definitely like family. Family is the biggest point of contact that kind of keeps me Zimbabwean, quite frankly. Yeah. If it wasn't for family and like speaking the language, speaking Shona, also being in community and like in connection with a lot of like Zimbabweans, which I'm so thankful for, because I was afraid that there wouldn't be any here. So it's just like really incredibly like cool to see other Zimbabweans like in, you know, the city and like other people who are like, you know, doing stuff and like people who are artists, people who are businessmen, people who are in music, people who are all over the place. I think for me, I think when I was in Zimbabwe, I had a specific idea of what it meant to be Zimbabwean. But now that I'm here and I'm seeing other Zimbabweans like in other spaces, I'm like, wow, like my, like I said, my sense of identity is expanding to be like, wow, like look at what people are doing with this superpower of being from this like very special place. Yeah. And to me, it just makes me feel so like connected to that place once more. So, I mean, yeah, different practices, of course, like staying in contact with family, like trying to speak the language as much as I can. Even though when I go home, everyone is like, wow, your accent is, you know, can you still speak, you know? But I think, like, I think it's just kind of like maintaining that contact with people, family over there and people over here as well. So, yeah, I think that kind of like helps me keep grounded because like we're sharing this, you know, I guess like a shared reality being immigrants in Zimbabwe, and also just like that adds an extra layer of like, okay, like, you know, I'm seen, I'm from a place, I belong in a place, we all belong in a place.
100%. And I think that there are even more things like social media sometimes following like content like that is, you know, humor from back home can also be a thing.
Oh my God. The entire Zimbabwe diaspora, honestly, love them. Hugs and kisses to all of them. Love you all. Obviously, love to everyone on the continent. But I think that also that added aspect of like comedians, like in all these other places where kind of like we are Zimbabweans, but we also have this added layer of like immigrants. And that just adds another kind of like link in the chain to kind of like keep us like together and like hold us together. So that also brings another aspect of like, whoa, I didn't know Zimbabweans could, you know, do stand-up comedy like or just like and be successful or like be Broadway actors, actresses, you know what I'm saying, like artists, like actual like musicians and like do like very important big things. So I think it's just a whole community. It's not, it goes beyond like my like obviously my family and like it goes beyond the country, like this entire globe of all of us across the world, like I think
100%. For me, all of that plus like the food, because
food is important.
You know, so for me, all of that plus food, plus like the music, the dance, the, you know, being in community with people, you mentioned language, which is so true. Staying grounded with family is everything, you know. This was awesome, man. Thank you for sharing all that. We are reaching the end, and I want you to leave us with a word of wisdom. It can be a proverb from Zimbabwe, anything.
I don't know, like I always reference this a lot, like in my own personal life, like we have this kind of like, I don't know if it's a proverb or like a saying, and in Shona it goes like kusatenda huroi, which means not being thankful or not thanking is witchcraft. So I think for me, that is such a, like, in my ideology of who I am and how I move around in the world, I think no matter how tough, you know, things are or how, you know, incredibly dire things may seem or how hard life may be, there are always going to be little, you know, glimpses of light and sunshine and something we can have that, like, we can be thankful and grateful for. If someone, you know, is kind to you, if someone does something nice to you, for you, even though you might not like them, you have to, you know, give people their flowers, even though you know, you don't like it. But I think when someone does something good and commendable and worthy of like applause, or like if whenever someone does something good, you have to really give them, we say kupamunu sandudzake, which means give them their, like, you know, their accolades, mm-hmm. their flowers, you know, when something good has been done, like acknowledge it. Like when something beautiful and like good is happening, like you have to, you know, acknowledge it and give thanks for it. So that's one thing that, I mean, I would say for sure that I would meet people with. Yeah.
So that, in short, an Ingrid is a witch.
Listen, your words, not mine. I love the reason, personally. I mean, why are you not grateful? What do you know that we don't know?
Are you practicing? Yeah,
you know, 100%, if someone does something nice for you, like, why are you not saying thank you? Like, why are you? No, but I think it's always a beautiful way to like traverse through life with an attitude of gratitude. Like,
yes,
that's, you know, exactly, I always just being thankful. And like, you know, I think it just speaks to like even just like Zimbabweans in a lot of the ways that like there's not a lot of stuff like going great in the country itself. Like people are having a really hard time. I think there's just an ability to kind of like, we call it kungwava ngwava, which is just to hustle, to move, to flow, which I'm sure a lot of, you know, people on the continent do. And they just kind of make it work. They make it do what it do. And I think it's just, you have to kind of maintain this like kind of like momentum to be able to move through, you know, life when life is like that. So I love them.
Yes.
My biggest inspiration.
Oh, that is awesome. Thank you so much, Niyesha. This has been an incredible episode already. Would you mind sharing your social media?
I do not mind. I mean, I do have a private account, and I can't guarantee that I will accept all requests. But my handle is at udadewetu, which is spelled UDADEWETHU.
What does it mean? Is that your name?
No. Oh my God. No. My name is Nyasha. Like, but udadewetu means like sister in like Ndebele, and like, I suppose like other like Guni language, like Zulu. So,
Sister Niyesha.
Yes.
Yes. Awesome. Thank you again, Niyesha. This has been an incredible episode with you.
Thank you.
Thank
you for having me. I really appreciate it. I honestly like was like, I don't know why you want me on the show, because I don't know what I have to contribute, but I appreciate you, you know, seeing something about me and my story that was worth sharing. And I hope, I don't know, like, yeah, if you're in Calgary, if you see me on the street, if you heard the podcast, like, if you want to chat, like, hit me up. Like, you know, my Instagram might be private, but when I'm in the public, I'm approachable. You know what I mean? So, yeah, come up to me, say hello, you know? Yeah. So thank you for having me. I'm really thankful.
Yeah, of course. And I think that your message of how, because I mean, the world, it's becoming more and more individualistic, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's almost always like every man for himself, even within families, right? Unfortunately. And so I think that your story is beautiful in the way that your community came together for you, you know, like you put yourself out there and they're like, our daughter, we enter abroad. Amen. We will make sure she gets there. She must enter that plane. You know, and they came together and they made it happen. And I think that is just freaking, it's beautiful because, you know, like in a world of social media where everyone is all about self-promotion and self, I think that like reminding us that, you know, we are a community, we are here for each other. Like no man is an island. I think that's incredibly valuable, you know,
for us to
remember. But
if I can give one last shout out, I want to shout out my mom because I think like in the overall like story of like me getting here, she's the one who really like, you know, put the pedal to the metal and like put her most faith in me. Of course my family was part of it, but like she really believed in me in a way that like even though she might not express it or like say it, and she, you know, sometimes her like, you know, doubts might be coming off a little bit like attacks, questions sometimes, but I think at the end of the day, she really, I really appreciate her for believing in me and trusting that I would come here and like do what I needed to do. So shout out to my mom. Love her so much. Mwah. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you for
shout out to Mama Niyesha. Niyesha is a good girl. She did not join bad guys.
No, really, please. Yeah. When this comes out, I'm going to take this clip and be like, see you, I'm done. Like, I'm not just out here doing whatever.
Yeah, I know.
I'm an adult. I've done things. Thank you so much.
Yes. Shout out to Mama Nyasha. Again, once more, thank you, Nyasha, for coming on the show. And to our listeners, thank you for sticking through with us. We'll see you on the next episode. Bye. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Afros in the Diaspora. I hope this episode left you feeling inspired and hopeful. To engage, feel free to like, follow, share, and subscribe to Afros in the Diaspora on all social media and podcast platforms. Remember to leave a review and a rating. If you would like to be a guest, please reach out. Send an email to hi@afrosinthediaspora.com. That is hi@afrosinthediaspora.com. Or send us a DM on Instagram @afrosinthediaspora. Remember, there is beauty in our stories and power in our voices. Together, we are stronger. Until next time.